Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What's course-based research in college, and how can it be used for sports analytics? Let's go in-depth with Caitlin Volster and Russ Goodman, professors at Central College. Russ, you've been doing sports analytics for a while and doing some really interesting work and involving students in it, which is exciting.
When I came to Central out of grad school, I realized pretty quickly that students weren't interested in learning about the theoretical mathematics that I'd worked on in grad school, and I needed to find something that was going to be more appealing to them and more appealing to me. And so working with sports data and statistics and all that sort of stuff, really, I found that appealed to students a lot, and it was kind of a good hook to get them interested in mathematics and computer science and statistics, while also being on a topic that was interesting to them.
And Caitlin, you're in the kinesiology mm-hmm. department. And what's kinesiology?
So it's the study of human movement. And so when we look at data analytics, sports analytics, it's that quantifiable piece of our science. We certainly care about how people move, and we can look at movement in a lot of different ways. But the numbers, the quantitative piece of testing and performance really tied into this project.
And so many years ago, I had a course in kinesiology, and it was a lot about understanding muscle movement in sports, where you try to figure out what muscles are performing eccentric and concentric contractions when a pitcher throws a fastball.
We love that. That's exactly our world. So that's the science-based piece of it. But we also care about making sure that movement is pain-free. It's an efficient movement for all different populations, not just the athlete, but for a variety of populations.
And you've got this course, and what's it called? Remind me.
It was a very creative title, Sports Analytics, : In the first year we taught the course, it was Sports Analytics, : Soccer. And then the second year, this past fall, was Sports Analytics, : Football.
You wrote a paper about it that got my attention. You wrote a paper about that course.
Right. We taught the course the first year, and it went fine. It was during the COVID year, so it had its challenges. But by and large, it went fine. The students worked very hard. And then we taught the course a second time last year, last fall, with the Central College football team. And during that semester that we were teaching the class, I saw one of the math journals that I pay attention to put out a call for proposals of articles about what's called course-based undergraduate research experiences, so CURE, CURES. And I looked at Caitlin and I said, well, I mean, what we're doing is the definition of that, and I'm willing to bet that no one else has written an article on this particular topic of course-based research. And so we ended up just drafting it and editing it and taking quite a long time to go through that process. That article was based on our experience the first year teaching the course, sort of influenced by the second year because we sort of learned what we needed to learn about teaching the class more effectively. And a lot of that is reflected in the paper that we wrote with details of how the course is organized, the schedule over the course of the semester, what we expect of the students, what some of the outcomes were, etc.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about course-based research in sports analytics with Caitlin Volster and Russ Goodman with Central College. Fill me in a little bit. You put motion detectors on the athletes? In my mind, I'm thinking about all the soccer players. Did you do that for football players too? Football players and soccer players, tracking movement, speed, what else?
Sure. So Russ and I got a grant to ultimately purchase 30 of these Catapult GPS accelerometers. So they measure, 30 plus variables, speed, acceleration at different ranges, impacts, how hard somebody might hit another person,
energy expenditure.
It can do heart rate. So there's a number of variables that it does. And it measures something every 200ths of a second. So if you can imagine, there's a lot of data collected. And part of the course was to get the students to, one, focus in on a research question, but then be able to identify what data is important to their question and how to analyze that information to make something meaningful that you might present to a scholarly community, a coach, a strength and conditioning professional, a variety of people that might be interested in a season, a practice, whatever their question was trying to ask.
It sounds like there are millions of data. In one soccer game or one football game, there's millions of data points.
It's insane how much data these little things collect. So the size of the accelerometer is the size of a
4 inches.
4 inches long, maybe 2 inches wide. It's a tiny little thing that essentially kind of goes in a what they call a vest, but it basically looks like a sports bra. So when you watch, it is common in soccer, you'll see a player score a goal and he'll rip his shirt off and you'll see Catapult brand across his chest, and the device is in a little pocket and it goes between the shoulder blades on your back. And it's pretty unobtrusive. I've worn it for a while. I think you've used them before too. And once you get moving around, you don't feel it anymore, but it collects millions and millions of data points over the course of a 3-hour football game, for example.
Well, and what is it, somehow embedded in the shoulder pads of the football player?
It's just underneath it, just like a t-shirt or anything like that.
Doesn't bug them, doesn't hurt when somebody's
hits you? By and large, no. I think every individual is different, but yeah, we had no problem recruiting student athletes to wear this. It really is something that at the elite levels, professional levels, even Division I, it's becoming more common. So to introduce this to a Division III population, we were very excited to have the funding to purchase this equipment, but I think the student athletes also are really excited to be a part of something so new and innovative at our competition level.
And the practicality of it is I'm sure physiologically there's a reason to put it between the shoulder blades, but also when you think about watching a soccer or a football game, even a hockey game, how often does someone have like a violent impact in the middle of their back? Right, so there's actually not really a lot of danger in the player getting injured or the device getting damaged, except in maybe kind of an extreme, some sort of accident where players bump into each other by their backs, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not going to get damaged very easily.
And that little piece on the back is that we have fitness trackers on our wrist, or the pedometer, 20 years ago was pretty common. And between the back is a little bit more accurate in terms of the trunk position. And so measuring distance would be one of the things that's a tiny bit more accurate at that body position than the arm or the hip.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about course-based research in sports analytics with Caitlin Volster and Russ Goodman with Central College. Do you learn about, with soccer, let's just say, what's the best place to, to kick a goal, or is that the utility of it, or you're not moving fast enough to kick the goal?
Well, I mean, that's a good segue into how our course began, because we really impress upon our students that this is research, right? The questions are endless, and it boils down to what question you want to answer, right? So you can use the GPS part of these accelerometers to identify and sort of watch the video of a game and determine where a player was when a goal was scored, etc. That wasn't necessarily the goal of the course, because for us it was more about understanding what an athlete goes through when they train and when they play, what physical load is on them as they go through a season, for example. So you can use those devices to answer sort of tactical coach questions. We were more interested in guiding our students towards physiological questions. How much energy is a particular position, is a wide receiver putting into the game versus a defensive back, for example? Or how many impacts, or what type of impacts does a goalkeeper in soccer go through over the course of a season? So the questions are endless, though, right? And it was really up to our students to determine what direction they wanted to go, what they were really interested in, and then our job was to sort of facilitate that.
You've got, I don't know, rules of the game, and you've got a geometry of, well, like, let's talk about baseball. The geometry of baseball is really simple compared to the geometry of a soccer or a football game, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got certain statistics that you can plug in that are certain outcomes that are desirable and not. And I guess you've got the same thing with soccer and football. But how do you integrate the data with those statistical outcomes that you might want, or do you, or you just, you might want that. I mean, professional teams would certainly want that, right? Or am I going down the wrong?
No, that's modern sports science. It's understanding, right? So I still help coach the women's soccer team at the college. I'm very interested in knowing how much of a load we're putting on our players so that we minimize their chance of being injured. And at the highest levels, they're very interested in investing millions of dollars in caring for these million-dollar athletes, for example. So that notion of what do our practice plans over the course of a week, what do Jeff McMartin's practice plans over the course of a week do to his offensive linemen? Is he asking too much of them, making them more likely to get injured, or is there sort of a green zone for those players to be in that put them at peak performance but don't put them at risk of injury? That's one way you could look at this, is in terms of minimizing injury risk.
From the last fall semester with the football team, our students who, interestingly, didn't have a lot of experience watching football, so we kind of had to have a learning curve there, but they readily recognized our offensive output was incredible, among the best in Division III. And so that strategy component did take a different lens to the data, maybe compared to what they saw in the literature when you compare numbers to numbers, or maybe what it might look like next year if we were with the football team again. So there is a component of how does the team play, what is their strategy, and using that to then make sense of the numbers as well.
So if I were a student or a coach, what I would want to know is the load you were talking about, energy expended, practices versus as the practices continued over the season, and then the game. What was the differential between the game and practice? Is that a good research question?
It is, and there's nuance to that, though, because there are different audiences, right? Our goal with this course or with these courses was academic research, understanding physical load put on the soccer team, understanding physical load put on the football team, the Central College football team. A different audience would be the head coach asking, okay, is how much effort is Joey putting forward? How much effort is Sarah putting forward? That's a very different question, because that's not academic research, but that's certainly valuable from a coaching perspective. So is there an audience for these accelerometers at the college being used by the coaches for the sake of their team? Absolutely. Is there an audience for students to use these accelerometers with athletes for academic knowledge generation? Yes. But those are two very different things, and it's really dangerous to blur those lines, because if you're doing just pure research and you're trying to understand something better, you don't want there to be a judgmental component of that with coaches saying, oh, so-and-so is not playing so hard, I'm going to lower his or her playing time. Right, there's a line there that you want to be careful not to cross. As long as you know what it is you're trying to understand, then absolutely you go that direction, whether it's a coach or a professor trying to understand some physiological thing better.
And I think that through the course, the academic piece was absolutely the priority. But in our classroom conversations, we challenged the students to think about who are the stakeholders and how would you either frame that question or frame the results for those different stakeholders. So again, we've, through the course of 2 years, I've probably had 12, 15 different research projects. And so within those, how does the scholarship want to review that information? How does the coach, how does the strength and conditioning professional, how does the athletic trainers, you know, that injury risk component? So I think it challenged the students in a variety of ways, because in any given context professionally, you're not just going to work with kind of one clientele. You're going to have a variety of people that you need to twist the message for, the same message, but in a different way.
There's whole kinds of ethical things involved with this that I hadn't thought of.
And that's part of the research. So in any human research, you have to complete an institutional review board process, an IRB. And so we had our students do that. They had to write, 8 to 10 pages, it tends to be, about how they're not going to cross that ethical line.
Well, in the minute or so we have left, can you just share any aspect of this that I didn't know enough to ask that the listeners might want to know?
I think one of the just most beneficial parts of this is the students learning how to come up with their own question and to pursue that project either individually or in a small group. It was mostly individually. But understanding that work is never really complete. You might get to a stopping point, the end of the semester or whatever. But the students really learned that process of how research is done, how new things are developed or learned or understood. And that's really important because, the work that they did in our courses, is it going to change the world? Probably not. But, the next research project they work on, which is even more complex, is probably going to go more smoothly because of, I think, some of the things that we help them learn about that process of beginning such a big project.
I'd echo, I think, in the paper, the process part was very important to us from the beginning, to learning just how to navigate a challenge like a pandemic and how that changes practices for the women's soccer team, how to think about, I want the video of that, but I have to sit for 2 hours and start to code that video out of what I'm looking for in terms of how to complement the accelerometer data to actual game performance. So there's so many different process-oriented parts of the learning in the class, and I think that, again, aligns to over your 4 years of college, professionally, really is that end product, that the final piece in what you're going to do, it's probably going to lead to something else.
Yeah, I think there's a greater respect for when the students see other research projects or read other papers, they'll realize how logistically complicated some of those projects, or most of those projects, really are.
Thanks to Caitlin Boster and Russ Goodman for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.